This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, it's Science Friday. Ira Flatow will be here to talk about who's hijacking science for political gain, plus the latest on two rare cases of mad cow disease in the United States. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. In just a moment, Rafael Pulido, a.k.a. El Pistolero, joins us to talk about the power of Spanish language radio. But here are the headlines from some of the other stories we're following here today at NPR News. The U.S. military says the man claiming to be the new leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq is Abu Ayyub al-Masri. They say al-Masri is an Egyptian with ties to Osama bin Laden's deputy. And the Supreme Court has ruled that police in Michigan can use evidence they gathered in a search warrant at a home, even if they do not knock. Previous court rulings have said officers with search warrants must knock and announce themselves prior to entry. Details on those stories and, of course, much more later today on Talk of the All Things Considered from NPR News. For nearly 4 years now, tens of thousands of Chicagoans wake up to this radio reveille.
El show más chingón de Chicago. El Pistolero y Memín. En la que buena. 105.1 con orgullo mexicano.
And that's the voice of Rafael Pulido, better known as El Pistolero, the star of the morning show on Chicago's WOJO. Pulido is credited as a driving force behind Chicago's massive immigration demonstrations this spring. He's also boosted his audience and his radio station's market share along the way. If you have questions for El Pistolero about Spanish language radio, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. And Rafael Pulido is with us here at the National Association of Hispanic Journalists Convention in Fort Lauderdale. Nice of you to join us today.
Nice to be here, and thank you for the invitation. It is a great pleasure to be here for the first time.
Yeah, it's violates one of the basic laws of radio. You never have a guest with a better voice than yours, but nice of you to be with us.
Well, thank you.
Surveys show that Hispanics listen to a lot more radio than other Americans do. How come?
I believe for the amount of hours that we put at work, I believe for tradition, we have more access to radio than we do to television. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have people working in construction. You name the job, and you have Mexicans working there. So I believe that's the reason why we just basically, because we have more access to radio than television.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, how did a kid from the Central Valley in California wind up as a radio star in Chicago?
I wonder that myself. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be an agricultural engineer, and just didn't have the money to go to college. And it was just coincidence. It was my brother that was getting his back then 1985. He was getting his FCC license mm-hmm. to broadcast. It's no longer needed nowadays, but back then you needed it. And he was doing his internship for, as a matter of fact, a non-public radio station in Fresno, California. And I started hanging around with him, and that's how I got started in radio when I was 15 years old.
And I understand that at one point, though, you were actually in honest work as in an auto body shop.
Yes, I was doing auto body work, auto body collision. I was renovating vehicles, and I was working, trying to earn a dollar.
And then in radio, as I understand, some of your friends were hanging out at the radio station. You started hanging out there, too.
Yes, back in 1991, after GMC went, back in 1990, I believe it was that huge strike, and there was a lot of people laid off by General Motors, and I was part of that. I was working back in Central California for General Motors branch. I moved to Oregon, and I started a business with a friend of mine in Oregon, and it was an auto body, and it wasn't going all that well. We didn't have the money to buy a paint booth, so we're just doing detailed. And then one of these clients invited me to go to a radio station, and it happened to be the first Spanish radio station in Salem, Oregon.
And since then, I know you went back to the Central Valley for a while and worked there.
Yes.
And then on to Chicago. But across the country, the number of Spanish stations has doubled as over the past 15 years, as indeed the Spanish-speaking population in the country has doubled over the past 15 years.
Oh, yes. I mean, the Hispanic listener has grown dramatically, I mean, in huge numbers. And, I mean, cities where you... Five years ago, where you would never think that it was going to be a Spanish radio station. Mm-hmm. Now you have Spanish formats with original Mexican, and you have with you know, it has grown a lot.
Yeah. As your listeners are, what kind of things would they hear on your morning show if they tuned in every day? What kind of, do you talk about issues, political issues? I know you talked a lot about the rallies this spring.
Yes. Well, first of all, let me add this. Commercial radio, there's a huge difference between a commercial radio and a non-public radio, mm-hmm. and talk radio. I don't, as far as 5-10 years ago, our Hispanic community, it seemed like they were not ready for talk radio to speak and talk about issues of immigration, to talk about domestic violence, drug abuse, all these issues. And I believe commercial radio has played a huge role in making people aware as of what Proposition H.R. 44 is. Something that, for the first time, I believe...
That's the House Immigration Bill.
Yes. Yeah. I believe that for the first time, commercial radio and on-air personnel took upon the task of interpreting and translating what that proposition meant. And I think that's what woke up the giant,
became,
the Latinos.
You became political advocates.
In a way, we did. Yeah, in a way, we did. And I believe, first of all, it's a responsibility for all of us that are behind a microphone to try to help our communities as best as we can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We have a question from the audience here in Fort Lauderdale.
I'm Tatiana from California, and speaking of responsibility, I teach teenagers, a lot of them are Latino, and they were faced with a really difficult decision, I felt like, with all the days of protest as to how they should deal with walking out or not. And I know the radio
walking
host...
Walking out of school?
Walking out of school, right, as a protest. And I know that hosts like Piolín said to not walk out to the students. That was his message over the air.
A broadcaster in Los Angeles.
A broadcaster in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was wondering... How did you go about making that decision about what to say to your audience and maybe specifically the students about if they should walk out, if you made a statement or didn't?
I personally said to my audience that if students are going to be walking out of class, I personally don't support it because we all know our Hispanic and Mexican American and ESL programs are funded by the government. When a student is missing from class, that's money that's going to be missing for that program. So are we hurting the system? Are we hurting the schools? Are we hurting the school districts by doing that? I believe we should support. They are the future of our nation. They are going to be the voters of the future. And they are the students are the ones that I truly believe that are being hurt the most over all this immigration issue. Why? Because it is very difficult to tell your son, mijo, after you graduate, it doesn't matter what GPA average you have, you're going to have to work at a restaurant because you don't have any papers. That's a waste of a brain, of a human being brain, and that's the worst thing a human being can do. And I support it in a way if there's adults leading the individuals, the students. I believe I should support it, and everyone should support it because they are the future of our nation. But I believe it should be coordinated and not just walk out of school and be missing school.
Mm-hmm. What did your students do, Tatiana?
They were pretty divided. Some of them stayed. Some of them decided to just stay till noon because I think the school gets the funding if you stay till a certain time. But the thing that really surprised me was the administration, the way they dealt with it, because they just sort of clamped down and said, well, you're a troublemaker if you're going out of school. And there just wasn't a lot of honest dialogue. And I felt like they basically kind of the chips fell where they were. And you could tell who was in charge and who wasn't. And a lot of their talk about Latinos being leaders and that sort of thing, they didn't treat the kids with the dignity, I felt, of helping them make a decision that was really hard for them. Because in one school, the protest was walking right by their school and their gates were locked and they couldn't even go. And all these people were streaming by and they were locked, literally locked inside their classroom.
Yeah, I believe it's all about coordination. Who's behind it? I don't support just telling students on the air, walk out of school.
Well, in terms of who's behind it, a lot of people said you were behind it. in Chicago and the other broadcasters in Los Angeles and other places, that you were the ones who are calling for this.
We started this whole march protest back in July 2nd of last year. Our second march in Chicago was March 10th.
Mm-hmm.
And then came the LA and the 25th, and then, you know, across the nation, as we all know. How did it happen? I believe it was, first of all, have the responsibility and the honesty to translate, like I said before, what was the threat behind H.R. 4437? It surprised me that in a research that we conducted, 98% of the population into where our signal reaches, like Indiana, all the suburbs of Chicago, Wisconsin, and other states, I can't.
Pretty powerful signal.
And 98% of the population, and I'm talking about American citizens,
mm-hmm.
I'm talking about immigrants, did not even know what H.R. 44 was. They didn't know they were going to be. They were being threatened to be criminalized if they assisted.
So is that part about being branded for illegal aliens to be branded as felons, that was the thing that galvanized it, do you think?
I think that's what woke everybody up. You had to say, I mean, if I want to be a good Samaritan and I want to help my neighbor that it's an immigrant, why should I become a criminal? I mean, the Bible tells us to help the people in need. You know, why should I be criminalized? And, you know, people didn't know. People didn't even know that it had already been passed in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't even know that it had been approved already on December 12th back of last year.
Well, it's currently in a House-Senate committee trying to reconcile very different bills that came out from the House side and the Senate side. Is this something that you follow every day on your program?
Yes, and it's sad. I mean, the way I put it to my audience, it's like having a teenager at home that wants to go out on a Friday night,
mm-hmm.
and mom already said yes, you could go, but dad mm-hmm. said no, you can't go. So the kid is lost, the teenager is lost, you know, he doesn't know what to do. You know, that's the way I see what's going on right now, because as we all know, the House of Representatives have already approved
mm-hmm.
to criminalize, and now the Senate said no, let's go back and let's reconcile. You know, it talks poorly about our nation and our the way that this immigration issue, the government, how the government has been turning their face and their back to this reality that we have 11 million illegal immigrants in this country.
We're talking with El Pistolero on Chicago Radio, WOJO. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another call question from the audience here in Fort Lauderdale.
Hi, my name is Carmina Perez. I'm a journalist from New York. And my question is, I was just curious, what type of audience you have? Is it mostly Spanish-speaking only, or is it bilingual? And what's the future for Spanish radio? Do you see it continuing to grow? Or what's going to happen as more and more Latinos assimilate into the English culture?
I believe it's a mixture of listeners. We have a huge number of both English and Spanish speaking people. We have a large number of first generation immigrants. I believe it's a mixture of both. I believe it's a mixture and a concern of both.
What about the future? I mean, what about her question? Do you see this declining?
For the future for Spanish radio, no. I believe it's going to continue to grow. I believe we do have a certain pride for Latino inherit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference between Latino, Chicano, and between a first gen. I am a part and the consequence of the need to emigrate to another country. My mother brought us when I was 10 years old to California. I could tell you that I know firsthand what's to be called mojado, and be proud of it, because you understand that it was not by choice. But what do you do about it? Do you turn your back and you thank God because you had the opportunity to immigrate, learn the language, and have a career, and earn a well salary, or do you try to do something? I believe that is ought to be our responsibility in radio, and that it's going to be the future for Spanish radio to be able to pick up the microphone and be able to educate our people with issues that are harming and threatening our Latino. Doesn't matter if it's Latino first-hand generation or a fifth generation Latino. I think we have a huge responsibility to educate our people.
What do you say to those Hispanic Americans who came in and did it legally and say to their other people that you should do it legally too, that there are rules to obey and a way to do this properly?
There are rules to obey. There is a system to come to the United States legally, but that system, it's not equal and fair for everyone. If I'm a family member of a wealthy family in Mexico and I want to come and study in the United States, of course, they're going to grant me a visa. But if I'm a son of a poor, a small village father, they're going to put everything in front of me to not make it to the United States. That's a huge difference that a lot of people don't understand. Mm-hmm. The system does not work equally for everyone. And we have this greatest example. Why do the majority, I will say 99% of the artists, I'm talking about soap opera artists and actors from Televisa, they come across the border easily with no problems. Why? Because they're backed up by a huge corporation.
But does the fact that the system is not perceived to be fair by some people, does that make it okay to break the law?
It does not make it fair, but we got to understand one thing. This what we called immigration, illegal immigrants, mojados, whatever you want to call it, the reality, that's the survival of the species. We've seen human beings do it generation after generation. The Italians did it. Going back to history, you know, that's exactly what the pilgrims did when they came to this country and stayed and built a great country. We have to understand that it was the survival of or the willingness to provide a better living for their loved ones.
I think we're beginning to understand why your numbers on Chicago radio are growing up. El Pistolero, thanks very much. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Rafael Pulido, who's on Chicago radio station WOJO, La Que Buena, every morning on Chicago radio. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Our editor is Scott Cameron. Our executive producer is Sue Goodwin. The Talk of the Nation senior producer is Carlene Watson. I'm Neil Conan. It's been great to talk to you from Fort Lauderdale. Ira is here tomorrow with Science Friday. We'll be back with you from 3 a.m. in Washington on Monday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.